As we go into John's epistles, and by the way, we have seven and a half pages of Bible to cover. So we're doing okay. John was battling a couple of things. I'm going to go to the board for a moment. I wrote on the board four different aspects that we're going to be talking about as we see John trying to combat. This is right around the turn of the century, the first century, as it ended, around 90s, in the 90s A.D., and there just starting was a movement called Gnosticism, G-N-O-S-T-I-C-I-S-M, Gnosticism. Now, Mr. Holliday has probably already talked to you considerably about Gnosticism. Gnosticism, and if you want to say, what is Gnosticism? It means we know. And we could call them the know-it-alls. Know-it-alls, okay? Those who were Gnostic were the know-it-alls. It was a brand that we know. We have this higher elite form of knowledge. We have higher sense of knowledge, okay? Gnosticism, then, could take a form. One form of Gnosticism was Docetism. D-O-C-E-T-I-S-M, Docetism. Docetism comes from a Greek word that means to seem. It only seems like. Now, when you understand the word Gnosticism, we know, they prided themselves in that they had, because they knew so much, they were actually higher than others. And they put themselves into two classes. One class was the Sukkoi, and the other was the Pneumatikoi, or Pneumatikoi. Sukkoi were like the people that were looked upon by the Pneumatikoi, or the Pneumatikoi, the word for pneuma, or pneumatic, P-N-E-U-M-A, M-N-A, Pneumatikoi. These were the ones who were, they were the elite. They considered themselves above others. That they were in a special know. They had, not only were they Gnostics, they had a special knowledge. The Sukkoi were just an average person going about, the brute beast, the people of the flesh. That's where you get the word Sukkoi, more of the people of the flesh, as opposed to Pneumatikoi, or P-N-E-U, the word for pneuma. Pneuma, P-N-E-U-M-A. The Pneumatikois were the ones who believed that they were higher. They were people of the spirit. The others were people of the flesh. The people of the spirit, the know-it-alls, the highest know-it-alls, they were ones who believed that they were above sinning. That God was only light. Well, no, he was not light. He was a mixture of light and darkness. So it was okay to do both. But that God was the only reality. And so unless you had arrived at this spiritual knowledge, this spiritual sense, unless you had arrived at this level, this plane of existence, you as a person were not there. Okay? And they saw themselves as elite. They saw themselves as above others. They saw themselves as having a super understanding that others could not attain or did not attain. Therefore, it was kind of like a sense of spiritual pride. They already said that they could not sin because they were so good. And even if they did sin, you'll find that in your new book. Even if they did sin, God wouldn't notice it because they had so many other good qualities. So you find John is combating this. They also believed, and there we come to Docetism. Docetism, it only seems. They said that God was so good, spirit is so good, it could not possibly have mixed with the flesh. So Jesus Christ could not possibly have been God in the flesh. He was God on the flesh, or it only seemed like he was in the man Jesus, while he, Christ, just used the man Jesus for his ministry, and then left him before the crucifixion because he didn't want to know death. So they said it only seems like Christ came. Seems like. It only seems like he was in the flesh. only seems like he was on the earth. So the Docetists taught it only seems like, because spirit is so good, because that's the only reality. Spirit is so good, couldn't possibly mix with flesh. Now we know that the Bible says he became flesh. Very clear. He became flesh. He gave up who he was. He still was spirit. That's how he was conceived. He was spirit with flesh. But they could not believe that anybody could do that, because it was contrary to their belief system that spirit is the best, and we're the spiritual ones. We have attained this higher erudite knowledge. We are the elite. All right. Now, if you believe that, if you believe spirit was good and the body was no good, what might you do? And I'll come back to 2 Peter in a moment, too. I'm not going to forget your test. We come back to they have two aspects of it. See, if I believe the spirit is good and the body's no good, what do I want to do to the body? I either want to punish the body, let me pummel this body, let me keep it under, which then you go the direction of asceticism. You deny yourself, self-denial. I'm denying myself, I'm beating on myself. Today we have the same thing. People have eating disorders, people puncture their bodies in all places. All types of places, you know, they're trying to do hurt themselves. Why do you want to put holes in yourself all over the place? And I don't, again, ears, and even they're finding now that puncturing the upper ear could cause damage to you. I went to an acupuncturist. The acupuncturist does things on your ears, and he says very, very much their nerves through your ears. He said when people put holes all over the place up there, they could be damaging their nervous system. That was his take on it. Anyway, a few holes here and there, and I know it's stylish to have two or three in there, and I'm not knocking that one way or the other. I'm just telling you that when you start piercing all over the body, there's something wrong. If you remember the movie, is it Vegas Vacation? The kid had so many things. His mouth was wired. It was shut. He had things all over the place, and they said, you feel good about all those holes? He couldn't talk because he couldn't open his mouth. He had so many of these piercings in there, holding his lips together, and he had to drink through a straw in order to get any nourishment. That's ridiculous, okay? There are people who do pierce lots of parts of their body. Okay, asceticism. These people denied themselves, deny the body, fast, don't have... On the other side, if you said, well, the body is inconsequential, what I do in the flesh really doesn't matter because it's what I think, it's my spiritual self that counts, and I'm really strong spiritually, so now I can go off on the other side of hedonism and have endless pleasure, riotous pleasure. And so we see both of those things addressed. Plus you'll see John, when we go into the book of John, say, I saw him, I touched him, I heard him. I saw him, I touched him, I heard him, refuting the idea that Jesus only seemed like he came. We'll also see him say, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, the truth is not in us. We'll also see him use the term, if we say we know him, see, they claim to have this higher knowledge, and keep not his commandments, we're a liar. We also see him say, if you say you know God and you love not your brother, how does the love of God abide in you? Okay, what was he saying? Because they felt that they were superior to these others who were supposedly their brothers. So there are lots of issues that we'll talk about when we go into 1 John. But if you have some of that background, you can read over the handout. I'll comment on the back on the handout in a moment. But before I do that, I want to give you a quiz on 2 Peter. So those of you out in tape land, don't use your Bibles or anything. Let's see what you know. See what you remember. Don't use your notes. Let's see what you can remember. Only seven. I think only gave seven questions. Yeah, seven. Okay, number one. Number one is a true or false. 2 Peter is one of the most easily read Greek transcripts in the New Testament. It's one of the easiest books to read. True or false? You remember your background on 2 Peter. Number two, if we give diligence, this is a quote, to make our election and calling sure, we, now you want to finish the verse, think about it, We give diligence to make our election and calling sure, and this is in chapter 1. We, A, shall produce great fruits, B, shall never fall, C, shall enter God's kingdom, D, shall be given eternal life, E, none of the above. So what's the last part of that quote? What is he talking about? If we give diligence to make our election and calling sure, we, A, shall produce great fruits, B, we shall never fall, C, we shall enter God's kingdom, and D, we shall be given eternal life, or E, none of the above. Which one is the final part of that quote? Why was he saying give diligence to make your election and calling sure? Because if you do these things, you will never... Did I give it away? Probably did. All right, let's go to number 3. In 2 Peter 1, verses 16 to 18. 2 Peter 1, verses 16 to 18. When Peter speaks of Christ receiving glory and hearing a voice on the mountain, which event is he referring to in the Gospels? A, the Sermon on the Mount. B, Abraham trying to sacrifice Isaac. C, the Transfiguration. Or D, the Crucifixion. Or E, none of them. A, the Sermon on the Mount. B, the Abraham preparing to sacrifice Isaac. C, the Transfiguration. D, the Crucifixion. Or E, none of the above. 2 Peter 1, he speaks about Christ receiving glory and hearing a voice on the mountain. To what event in the Gospels is he referring? Okay, number 4. Number 4. In 2 Peter 2, Peter uses several examples from the Scriptures to show God's dealings with sinners. Which one of the following is an example Peter uses? A, God's judgment on rebellious angels. B, Korah's rebellion. C, Aaron and Miriam's rebellion. D, Israel's rebellion against God at Mount Sinai. Or E, all of the above examples were used by Peter. Which example or examples did Peter use? He only had to name one of these. Okay, let's go to the next one, number 5. Peter, is this true or false? Peter tells us that even though Lot was rescued from the destruction of Sodom, it was only for Abraham's sake and for nothing else. Peter tells us that even though Lot was rescued from the destruction of Sodom, it was only for Abraham's sake and nothing else. Okay, number 6. Peter warns, and this is multiple choice, Peter warns of scoffers coming in the last days. What is it that they are said to be scoffing about? Multiple choice. A, God's law is too restrictive. B, the earth evolved and was not created. C, where is the promise of the Christ's coming? D, the Bible is a book without relevance in modern times. Or E, all of the above. What were they scoffing about? God's law? The earth? Where's the promise of his coming? The Bible's a book without relevance? Or all of the above? And finally, number 7. Why is God not slack concerning the return of Jesus? A, because God has forgotten when he created the earth, and therefore doesn't know when the 6,000 years are up. B, because... Did you put that one down? I hope you did. All right, I'm trying to read them well, okay? Because Jesus is not desirous of coming back to the earth. C, because God is long-suffering and isn't wishing any should perish. D, because there is no bride for Jesus to come to marry. And E, none of the above. And if you don't get that one, you're in bad shape, okay? My students would we would prepare. They would, I would help give them some ideas, and they would prepare them, and I would look them over. And sometimes we try to put questions in there to give people gifts, right? We say, well, at least you're going to get one or two right here. Okay, let's go over. Let's answer them real quickly. You could grade yourself. Number one, 2 Peter is the most easily read, is one of the most easily read Greeks. False. It's not an easy to read book. It's the Greek was not good. It was rugged. Two, if we give diligence to make our election and calling sure, shall never fall or stumble, says in the New King James, shall never fall or stumble. Three, 2 Peter 1, verse 16 to 18, he speaks of receiving glory and hearing a voice on the mountain. Which event is he referring to? C, transfiguration. The transfiguration, not the crucifixion, not Abraham preparing to sacrifice Isaac, and not the Sermon on the Mount. Number four, in 2 Peter 2, Peter uses several examples from the Scriptures to show God's dealings with sinners. Which is the one he's referring to? A, God's judgment on rebellious angels. Remember, he uses the rebellious angels quite a bit. Number five, Peter, true or false, Peter tells us even though Lot was rescued from the destruction of Sodom, it was only for Abraham's sake and nothing else. False. He was righteous, just Lot. He was just, said, just Lot. Plus he was vexed with the people there, and God had sent the angels down to deal with them for their sin. Number six, Peter warns of scoffers coming in the last days. What are they said to be scoffing about? The promise of his coming. See, the promise of his coming. And number seven, why is God not slack concerning the return of Jesus Christ? See, because God is long-suffering and isn't willing that any should perish. So I'm sure you did pretty well on this quiz. You're getting to know my manner. Any perfects? Way to go. Hey, wow, way to go, guys. Way to go, gals. Good. Okay, I'm not going to ask anybody else. I'm not going to ask if anybody didn't even get one right. I'm not even going to ask that. You'll know now whether you pick up some things. And I just tried to pick out some of them. That's not the whole test. But I try to pick up some of them on this particular type. Okay, let's go talk about 1 John. And in the same process, we'll talk about the Johns. If you take your handout that I gave you, background to John's epistles. The date, 90 A.D., the dates for them about in the 90s, from Ephesus in all likelihood, where John was supposed to have finally been the pastor of or settled in. By the way, I visited old Ephesus, and they had a section there that looked like a special grave site that may have been where John was buried, and they had a ladies, it was a smaller box or whatever, and they said that could have been where the Virgin Mary would have been buried. Could have been. Because remember, John was supposed to take care of her. And they thought maybe, because it's very unusual to have that smaller type of a crypt there in that same area. So to give that type of honor to a woman in those days was not, you know, usually a woman was just buried off, not given a lot of honor. So that was just some thought. And again, we can't prove that. But Ephesus was quite a city. Quite a city. And we had the opportunity to go up and visit what would have been the auditorium in that area as well, the main amphitheater or whatever that they had. It was quite significant. Okay, the general audience to whom he writes are church members in Asia Minor. It is a general epistle to church members in Asia Minor. The author is the Apostle John, the son of Zebedee, the brother of James, the sons of thunder. Remember Mark 3:17. Jesus nicknamed them the sons of thunder. Sorry to say the sons of thunder. The sons of thunder. I got my THs and my S's mixed up. Why would you call somebody a son of thunder? They must have been dynamic. They must have been some pretty aggressive guy. And yet the Apostle John is one of the most loving ones. In fact, in 1 John, he uses the word love 46 times. And when we read about him in the Gospels, he is the apostle, he is the disciple Jesus loved. And I believe there's a reason why he loved John. I believe John was very much like Jesus Christ was. I believe John, that their closeness was an affinity, because John kind of related to what Jesus Christ was going through, that he had a sense of passion and he had a sense of zeal. And when you read John's writings, they're very loving. They're very loving, and where he talks about little children, anytime you use a diminutive form of a person, it's showing it's an affectionate way. My little child, my little children. It's an affectionate way of treating others. And I just get the feeling, in reading John's writings. And of course, we say that James, Peter, and John are faith, hope, and love. Those are the main themes of the certainly the first book of Peter. And James definitely about faith, and Peter talking about hope through suffering, and then the last one, love or charity. John covers that one pretty thoroughly. But he was called the son of thunder. So was his brother, James, who was killed. But John lived for a long time. Let me continue. Five books have been attributed to him, the Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, and Revelation. Take an overview of the contents. Like a loving elderly grandfather writing to his children and grandchildren. Love and law are the themes. Love and law are the themes of 1 John, as well as resisting the Gnostics in the form of Docetists. Gnostics were know-it-alls. While the Docetist form of Gnosticism did not believe that Jesus actually came in the flesh, it only seemed like he did. But in actuality, Christ used the flesh of the person Jesus. That's what they believed. John is the only writer to use the term Antichrist. Antichrist used five times, once in 2 John. Antichrist. He's the only writer in the New Testament to use the word Antichrist. And in reference to those who deny Christ, they are against Christ. And anybody can be an Antichrist. We know there's one main Antichrist coming at the end. But anybody could be an Antichrist if you're against Christ, if you stand against him. And he uses that in reference to these individuals. Second and third John remind Christians to stick with the truth, love the truth, and walk in it. Stick with the truth, love the truth, and walk in it. Second John is written like a letter to a lady and her children, but is personifying the church and its members. He writes to the elect lady. You say, who is this? Does he have a girlfriend? Is this a love letter that he intended to write, to somebody? No, you could read, as you read in it, you read about the church. And 3 John is written to encourage Gaius, who was a hospitable member of the church, to continue to show hospitality despite a headstrong elder named Diotrephes. John would deal with him later when he came. Similarities to the Gospel of John. In all the books, the apostle dwells on foundational blocks of love, truth, sin, world, life, light, and the paraclete, the one alongside the help. There are lots of references in all of them, because the reason I point this out is that there are those who say that 2 and 3 John were written by the elder John. Elder John, just some elder out there with the name John. And elder John wrote these things in this book, okay, in these two little letters, and that they weren't from the apostle John. So you see, he emphasizes the need to know, believe, and live those beliefs. John is strong in his emphasis on fellowship, more than any New Testament author is. Loving the brethren is necessary for life now and eternally. So again, he talks about loving the brethren, which is fellowshipping, spending time with them, being with them. You know you've passed from death into life because you love the brethren. So lots of things about, and don't say you love God if you don't love humans whom you've already seen. Don't say you love God if you can't love the people whom you already see. John mentions truth more than all the other writers in the New Testament. The last of the original apostles, he implores God's sheep to seek and hold fast to the truth. It is interesting. You can count them up. They're more than all the other writers of the New Testament combined. True, truth, truly. You'll find John uses them more in his books, five of them, as opposed to, 27? The other 22 all combined, John uses more. Why? Because he could see second and third generation Christians beginning to let truth slip through their fingers. Never relax, okay? You check it out. Make sure it is your belief system, not somebody else's belief system, your belief system. Is this what I believe? Is this what I see? Sure, you want to be teachable. Sure, you want to be guided. You want to say, help me, show me, teach me, lead me. You want to see the scriptures. What do the scriptures say? How do they understand? Richard?
Wasn't John a physician?
No, Luke was the physician. John was a fisherman. John was a fisherman. His father, Zebedee. He and James left the ship. Jesus walked by, said, come follow me. They left their dad. They said, well, there were servants there that could take over. And they just walked away. Hal has a question. You want to go to the microphone? Because, again, guys, we're being recorded, and I don't want to...
I kind of think that probably John was younger than any of the others. Maybe 17, 19, 20, somewhere in there, when, you know, he found Jesus. It seemed as though his demeanor is like that of a young person who has a lot of zeal and who has a real still innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't been hardened by the world or anything.
Yeah, we don't know his age. We do know that both he and his brother were called the sons, you know, of thunder. And we have no idea what their age would have been, particularly at that time. But he certainly lived longer than any of the others. And remember, he's the one about where Peter's, Jesus said, well, what makes a difference? What is it if I have, what about John? He said, what about John? What's going to happen to him? He said, what's it to you if he lives until I return? So then you want to know how gossip goes out? Then the word went out that John would not die until Jesus Christ returned. And that's gossip. Jesus didn't say that. He said, what is it to you? In other words, pay attention to your own. I just told you, can you be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized? You're going to truly go through what I go through. And again, tradition said Peter was crucified upside down. So Jesus said, yeah. And he says, well, what about John? You know, what about your friend? What about your best friend? And he said, what's it to you if he lives until I come back? But he didn't say he was going to. He just said, what's it to you? But the one thing that is significant is that he did outlive all the others. Josh, do you have a question? You want to go to the microphone, please.
So it says...
Talk right into it. Make sure.
Not clearly that Peter got crucified upside down, but...
It doesn't say that.
Yeah,
it just says, you indeed will be receive what I receive.
So
the indication is he was the prophecy or the statement of Jesus indicates he would die the same way Jesus died.
So he had to die that death too?
I'm sorry?
Upside down?
That's what tradition says. He was crucified upside down because when they wanted to crucify him the right way, he said, I don't want to be done. Don't do me the way I'm not worthy to be done the way my Lord was. And so they did him upside down. So he would have, blood would have rushed to his head. He would have been horrible.
All right, you said that the nickname Sons of Thunder, that Jesus did that, but I didn't see any indication in Scripture that it was Jesus who named them that.
Yeah, I just read it. I just read it in Mark, that he called them the Sons of Thunder.
Okay, and...
Did Mark 3:17 not show that?
I don't...
Anybody not... come to go there real quick? That's why that was in there. That is a reference, Mark 3:17. And he surnamed them Boanerges, the Sons of Thunder. Anything else?
Well,
I was wondering about the term the disciple that Jesus loved.
Yeah.
A couple of my roommates looked up all the, you know, we were looking into that because one was disturbed that he would like an apostle better than the others. And it only occurs in the books that John writes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, two of the times it uses a different word for love than the other time.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time that it says, like the philios love, that was if you look at the context in the Greek, that it was another disciple that Jesus loved.
not if you look at it, the event, and you compare the event to one of the other Gospels, which identifies John as the person by name. John calls him the disciple whom he loved.
Right.
So I don't want to get into that right now. We can do a study on it. I'll be happy to see your study. But I don't want to get into that part right now. But I do know there are events where he refers to himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved. And in another gospel account, the same event says John did this. So I know that, at least in that case.
Okay.
I'll take it up with you. I don't want to go in that direction right now. It's not my point to, at this point in time, to try to give a whole biographical sketch of John, but just to bring you some info on it. But I'd be happy to discuss that with you. Thanks, Tyler. Okay. Again, John is the last of the original apostles. All three epistles deal with conflict. First John, doctrinal and moral conflict. Second John, external conflict, false teachers. Third John, internal conflict, rival leaders. John uses logos as a name for Jesus Christ. Commandment keeping and love for God and fellow man are enjoined upon the readers. So he uses the word logos, too, for Jesus Christ. Words that only occur in the epistles of John: propitiation, unction, and antichrist. And then you see the outstanding scriptures that are there. So that's good background. I want to read to you a couple of comments from Barclay. This is the old Barclay, so I apologize for not giving you proper references, and you will not get the same info in yours. You may have to dig it out somewhere else. But anyway, page 4, he talks about it's hard to keep the faith after the initial zeal was gone. He goes on to say, in this area, second paragraph. Yeah, all this involved ethical demand. In other words, you're supposed to be hagios. Hagios meant you're different. Different meant you're supposed to walk a different way. All this involved an ethical demand. It demanded a new standard of moral purity, a new kindness, a new service, a new forgiveness, and it was difficult. Once the first thrill and enthusiasm were gone, it's what we all have to watch. You know, it's exciting to be baptized. It's exciting to walk with God. It's exciting to be a Christian. It's exciting to start with. And then, you know, 40 years later, you find yourself saying, it's effort, takes effort to be a Christian. It takes effort to keep praying. It takes effort to keep studying. It takes effort to keep obeying and looking to grow and change. And once the first thrill and enthusiasm were gone, it became harder and harder to stand out against the world, to refuse to conform to its generally accepted standards and practices of age. And so his comment was, he tried to get men and women in the church to remember to go back and look at the scriptures, to study the truth, to walk in the truth, to live the truth. He says, he that says, I know him and doesn't keep his commandments is a liar. The truth is not in him. And if we say we know God, we ought to walk as he walked or live as he lived. Page 5, top of the page, he says, the trouble which First John seeks to combat did not come from men out to destroy the Christian faith, I thought this is interesting, but from men who thought they were actually improving it. You know what? We're trying to help you. We're trying to help you be more elite, more understand, make you more acceptable. One congregation said, well, let's change to Sunday, not in United. Let's change to Sunday because that way more people can come. Because more people are used to coming to church on Sunday. Isn't that a nice, noble thing? Is it? What are you leading them to? You're leading them to not worship God on God's day. It came from men whose aim was to make Christianity intellectually respectable. They knew the intellectual tendencies and currents of the day, and they felt that the time had come for Christianity to come to terms with secular philosophy and contemporary thought. And right now, one of the major things in America is what's called secularism, where you just It's up to you. I'm a good person, but I decide what's good for me. I decide. And can you believe, here you have Rosie O'Donnell go out and get married, fly out to San Francisco, get married, to flaunt it, and she accuses President Bush of being immoral. She accuses President Bush of being immoral. Read the scriptures. What do they say? Okay, let me notice another one. Page 7 in this book has a section on docetism, and I want to just share with you briefly what it says. In its most radical and wholesale form, this form of Gnosticism is called docetism, which Goodspeed suggests might be translated seemism. Your book also has a section on seemism. The Greek verb dokein or dokein means to seem, and the docetists taught that Jesus only seemed to have a body. They insist that he was purely a spiritual being, had nothing but the appearance of having a body. It only seemed like. Skipping down at the bottom of this part, quote, bottom of this paragraph, it says, the simplest form of docetism is the complete denial that Jesus ever had a physical body. The complete denial that he ever had a physical body. Page 9 talks about water and blood. The teaching of Cerinthus is also rebuked in 1 John. John writes of Jesus. Again, Cerinthus drew the distinction between the human Jesus and the divine Christ. He's the one that said Christ only used the body of Jesus. Teachings were rebuked in 1 John. This is he who came by water and blood, Jesus Christ, not with water only, but with water and blood. What happened at water? Water was this significance. Remember when he was baptized and the Spirit came in the form of a dove, landed on Jesus. So the concept is coming. How did they what? Well, because Jesus bled, but Christ didn't. Christ only used Jesus. Christ left Jesus before the crucifixion, so he didn't have a part in the mess. Okay. The point of the verse is that Gnostic teachers would have agreed that the divine Christ came by water. That is, at the baptism of Jesus, but they would have denied that he came by blood. That is, that he could actually have bled, okay, at the cross or stake, for they insisted divine Christ left the human Jesus before his crucifixion. The great danger of this heresy is that it comes from what can only be called a mistaken reverence. It is afraid to ascribe to Jesus full humanity. It regards it as irreverent to think that he had only truly a physical body. Then it talks about the two attitudes. Gnostic attitude to matter and to all created things produced a certain attitude of the body and toward the body, things of the body, and so on. It might take a form of asceticism, fasting, celibacy, rigid control, even deliberate ill treatment of the body. The view that celibacy is better than marriage and that sex is a sin goes back to the Gnostic influence and belief. This is a belief which still lingers, he says. There's no trace of that view in this letter. It might also take the form of a contention that the body did not matter, therefore it doesn't matter what you do. The appetites might be gratified without limit. And of course, the Gnostics had this knowledge, real knowledge. They knew what was best and they knew what was worse. And as long as you had the knowledge, that's really what counted. And again, we talk about the pneumatikoi and the psuchikoi, the ones who are the psuchikoi. These Gnostics, they divided into two classes, the pneumatikoi, which were the people of the spirit, and the psuchikoi, the people of the flesh. They never did the two meet. And then they also talk about Gnostics who talked of being born of God, walking in light, having no sin, and dwelling in God. They also talked about knowing God. We're the elite. We know God. So let me go through and just give you a couple of comments. Okay, John was the disciple whom Jesus loved, John 19:26, John 22, and John 21:7. And this is not only me, by the way, this is all the men of the Bible who bring this out. So those who are studying it are going up against a lot of biblical scholars who say, well, that wasn't him. You could look up all the men of the Bible that has that description of him. The son of Zebedee, you can look at Mark 1. He was the brother of James, the fisherman. His mother was Salome, may have been she may have been a sister of Christ's mother, so he may have been a cousin to Jesus. He was ordained and sent forth with the others. He saw the transfiguration. He was one of the big three, Peter, James, and John, always went with Jesus. He took Christ's mother at death. He was so close to Jesus. Again, another reason to believe he was the disciple whom Jesus loved. He could have given his mother to any of the other disciples, but when he knew his last moments of life, his family were still unbelievers in his mind, he committed his mother to John. That's in John 19, verses 26 and 27. He wrote the Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and Revelation, and he writes to second-generation Christians. He deals a lot about knowledge. Okay, I'll stop there, and we'll finish this and do chapter 1 and probably part of 2 on Monday.